Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phidias Club. This is a show where we talk to people from different parts of the world, get their take, their opinions, the way they see things in general about the news. And hopefully we get to have different views on different things, and we broaden our horizons a little bit. That's the goal, at least. And we are going to be doing that today with my two guests. First of all, I'm Patrick Beja, and I'm very glad to be welcoming you on the show. The two guests are both second timers. Let's say hi to Alex from the US first. How's it going, Alex?
Well, hello, Patrick. Thank you so much for having me on.
I am very glad to have you on, and we'll get to why in just a little bit when we tackle our first topic, which everyone knows what it is. So, we'll get to that in a second. We also have Martin, whose name I say with a French accent, with a lovely French accent. How's it going, Martin?
Hello, and quite broken English. Sorry for that. Yes, I'm Martin, and I'm really happy to be here for the third time. Yes, I'm a third timer.
Third timer. You are from Japan, for those who don't remember those first two times. You're French, but you live in Japan. You're married to a lovely Japanese lady. And so you've been living there for how long has it been? It's 10 years? Yeah.
It's been quite a while, more than that. It's been 18 years.
Oh my
so far.
God.
So, I arrived actually a little bit after you left.
Yes, that's true. I did live in Japan in the early 2000s, back when I was a young man.
You're still a young man, Patrick.
At heart, yes. Actually, I was looking at the lineup today, the guest lineup, and I was thinking, hey, do you want a show where you get opinions from white men from 30 to 50 years old? There you go. Are you 28?
Boy, do we got him.
Are you 28, Alex? I can't remember. I think you're just...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just shy of 30.
Okay, so get us to include the millennial point of view in there as well.
Yeah, I do represent the millennial perspective, at least.
Nice, but don't blame yourself and myself, because we are not 50 yet.
That's true. Exactly.
We still have time.
That's why I said, you know,
30s and 40s.
Under 30 and 50 is the thing we're covering now.
What you need is the boomer perspective.
You don't have boomer. Exactly. Exactly. Actually, I'm pretty sure that would be very
boomer.
Interesting. That would be a
I'm
really
pretty
interesting
sure it
one,
would, yeah. Yeah.
That's something to think about. But not today. And before we launch into the topics, I do want to thank the patrons who support the show at patreon.com/thephidiasclub. The link is, of course, in the show notes. If you enjoy what we do, if you enjoy our discussions, if you manage to have some kind of fun or at least get something out of the discussions, I hope that you consider supporting the show. It's very easy. It's super... It goes super quickly. Like, you can do it in 2 minutes on your cell phone, on your mobile phone, on your smartphone. Cell phone sounds so 90s, doesn't it? I'm dating myself. Just click on your cell phone and you're done.
Your cellular communications device.
Exactly. Cellular mobile telephone.
You can support the show. And click also seems, and click also sounds a bit old now.
just whip out your BlackBerry and you're on the way to supporting the show. All right. So thank you very much, those who do. Seriously, I've already said it many times, but it makes me so happy and validated that you spend some of your hard-earned cash on entirely worthless causes like supporting me instead of spending it on very important things. No, I'm kidding. It means you think what I do is somewhat important, and I'm very thankful. All right, so I said you probably know what we're going to be talking about first, but really, do you? Definitely there are two important topics, and we were discussing a little bit before I hit record, and I think we agree that it's going to be COVID and the US election, and we discussed which one we should start with, but I feel maybe the US election is a little bit more appropriate, and we can cover it a little bit quickly and, you know, like a Band-Aid, as Alex said when we were talking about it. So the reason I'm really curious to talk about this first, actually, is because Alex is one of our conservative representatives on the show. You know, I joke about, you know, the white men between 30 and 50 perspective, but we do try to have a little bit of a different, you know, different countries, different views. And one of those is, let's not just have the same side on the show all the time. And Alex, am I mistaken? You voted for Donald Trump 4 years ago, correct? Unless you don't want to say
it. I did a write-in 4 years ago because I didn't feel like either candidate represented me. I think a lot of conservatives are in that similar boat, though.
Okay.
I mean, if you look at voter turnout in the 2016 election, it was an all-time low. So
right.
But did you wish it could be someone else at this time?
Absolutely. I 100% would have voted for some of the other Republican like potential nominees. Mitt Romney ran in the 2012 election. I absolutely would have voted for him. I would have voted for actually a lot of people who weren't Donald Trump.
So it was a default vote.
A write-in means you wrote the name of someone else on your ballot, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, yep. So you didn't actually vote for Trump?
No, I did not vote for Trump, but okay. I have voted conservative in the prior election to that for Romney.
Mm-hmm. So that I guess is an interesting perspective. I'm guessing if you didn't vote for him the first time, I'm guessing you are not going to, or you didn't vote for him the second time if you voted early, or if you're going to vote at all. Do you? That's the big question.
Unless you think he did great for the past 5 years.
You know, we are in an awesome spot right now. Man, oh man, I tap my heels every day and I go to paradise, which is my life right now.
You know, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of conservatives that maybe they're not happy with the way things went with Trump, but you got a number of things out of his presidency, not the least of which is the Supreme Court, which now has way more Republican leaning judges than Democrat leaning judges. So I think some people are very happy with this, but yeah, let's just ask you directly. What do you think of the situation currently, and how do you feel your conservative entourage and friends are feeling about all of it?
Sure. So, I mean, I'll start by saying the Supreme Court, what's the word? The
nominee
filling the Supreme Court. Well, not the nominee specifically, but just the idea that one can pack the Supreme Court with Republican centered justices is kind of a farce. It's, you know, jurisprudence is very complicated. And Andrew Heaton of the Political Orphanage has done a really good Judge Week podcast section for his podcast on what separates one judge from another and how they rule. But it doesn't really have to do anything, have to do with, you know, whether they're Republican or Democrat. So I know that that's how it's pitched in America a lot. And especially if you just turn on Fox News or CNN, you're going to see that nonstop.
But I mean, Alex, if the issue of Roe versus Wade comes up, and, uh-huh. you know, what's her name, the latest nominee, the woman? I mean, I understand that judges are supposed to interpret the law, and hopefully Congress manages to write more precise guidance in the law, like laws that can't be interpreted in such partisan ways, and the justice system should not be adjudicating, you know, these issues to that level. But some issues, if they go to the Supreme Court, it's fairly easy to guess how some of the nominees or some of the Supreme Court justices are going to vote. Wouldn't you agree?
I don't think so. I know that the Kavanaugh hearings and all that kind of stuff was an enormous crap storm. I don't know if I can swear on this podcast.
You can. It's fine.
Okay. It was an enormous shitstorm.
We're talking about reality, so we're already in that
situation. Yeah, exactly, right. We'll be swearing a lot. It's 2020. Kids, get used to it. No, it was an absolutely enormous shitstorm. And I think even in his tenure so far, which it's only been like a year and a half, 2 years, he has already voted, Republican, Democrat, whatever you want to say. He's voted along two different sides. And if anything, his decisions might lean a little in the favor of Democrats. I don't want to say Democrat because it's mm-hmm. not, it just isn't that simple. Amy Coney Barrett may well vote against Roe v. Wade, but if she does, if you watch the hearings, she's a very intelligent human being. And she said that she's not above recusing herself on topics that she does not feel that she can be objective about. Now, of course, that shouldn't be a lot of topics. Otherwise, she just shouldn't be on the court.
Right.
But if she does vote that Roe v. Wade is not constitutional, I am confident that it's not because of her views. It's because she sees the Constitution as this is not constitutional. And really, quite frankly, abortion should be a topic that is brought to Congress. It should not be decided by the Supreme Court, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
There is this huge fervor that, you know, oh God, what if Roe v. Wade gets overturned? Well, hell, let's get a majority of Congress peoples to agree that reproductive rights are a human right, if that is what the majority of America agrees mm-hmm. that it is, you know, like that,
yeah.
that needs to be in the Constitution. You can't have this little thin string that you hang on to. That is the Roe v. Wade decision that was made several decades mm-hmm. ago.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't need to be in the Constitution, or maybe they would want to, but I guess
it doesn't have to be necessarily.
It can be a law,
but
it
should be legislated, federally yeah. legislated, if the whole country agrees, or state by state legislated,
least,
if yeah. some states, yes, the majority yeah. of the country agrees.
I think, you know, I get half of all of my opinions about anything from my wife. So obviously, this is something where she has a lot of expertise. And her reaction to this was, you know, Supreme Court, yes, it does have a lot of power, but ultimately what it pushes, it should push the system to do is to get Congress to write clearer laws. Because, of course, jurisprudence is important and the interpretation of the law is always going to happen. But it seems, again, this is her understanding, her interpretation, and I trust her for everything. It seems Congress has been relying on judicial decisions a little bit too much to clarify things that they were like, yeah, okay, we'll put it like that and we'll see what the court says. And that's not how it's supposed to work from the beginning. So
right.
anyway,
and,
okay.
And
so, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that the state of Congress is such that they haven't been able to make a clear decision other than the CARES Act, which was woefully inadequate. And I think most Americans, they haven't been able to make a clear decision about policy in a very long time. And we really do need something to force them to do that. They can't just piggyback that problem onto the Supreme Court.
Mm, Yeah, I think I'm sure it's more complicated than that, but I take your point. Yeah. All right. So the election itself, and I guess it's a referendum on the state of the country or on the on the current government. But so you are a conservative, as you clarified. You didn't vote for Donald Trump last time around. What do you think about the whole thing? What do you think the country? Where do you think the country is currently? What do you think the election is? How is it going? Just tell us your sentiment. And again, maybe you are, to the extent that it is possible, representing what you know of the conservative, not partisans, but sympathetic to the conservative party people that you know.
Yeah, I see a lot of clients in a more red area. I guess it's kind of a purple area of Atlanta. So I think I get a pretty good finger on the pulse of, you know, different viewpoints. Most people in my circles of political thought are very unhappy with Donald Trump. They are. Until about the end of 2019, they were grudgingly happy with Donald Trump, because although he had been a total shitstorm of a person, he had pushed pretty Republican views. Now I'm a little different because I'm more of a classical liberal / libertarian, so I care a little more about budget stuff and nerdy stuff like that. So I'm just not happy no matter who's in office, but because everyone wants to spend more money than we have. But for those who really do care about Planned Parenthood, for those who really do care about immigration, those people were very happy until the pandemic hit. Mm. Now, after, you know, post COVID, his handling of it, his inability to be a leader and a clear guider of thought in our country when the majority of the country was terrified by this virus, he has not done well. He is not a good wartime president. He is not a good crisis president. He's not your FDR. You know, he's not your Roosevelt. So,
I mean, even without being FDR or Roosevelt, I think there's a
Roosevelt is FDR. Sorry.
Yes. Even without being FDR, there's a metro station, you know, FDR, like Roosevelt in Paris, like two stops away from me. So I should know that. But even without being those, I think, you know, tell me if you agree, Alex, there's one thing that is really annoying that has started to annoy me quite a bit with the way some people view Trump. And they say, or I should say President Trump, really, it's unbecoming. But a lot of people say on the conservative side say, oh, you know, it annoys me that he says dumb things sometimes. And I think what this year has shown very clearly is that you can't diminish it like that. He doesn't say dumb things sometimes. He says dangerous things all the time. Like, this is, it's not just, oh, dumb things sometimes. And I feel like that's something that more people who were, as you were saying, kind of grudgingly saying, okay, you know, he did this and that. How bad can it be? It's, the system is resilient, whatever. Now are thinking, okay, we got 4 years. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad that someone else got in office. I don't know if it's...
Yeah, I think that that's a part of it. Quite frankly, I never liked the fact that it does not matter to the current president or the current administration that they are particularly accurate about what they publicize. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that's dangerous. I don't think it's the first time in American history that that's been the case, but I don't think that it's something that we should vote back into office. Mm. I know that many people in recent, I guess, months in my conservative circles have actually gotten more upset with the president about his treatment of the other nominee, Joe Biden, in the first debate. which was an absolute shitstorm within a shitstorm. It was horrible. But he was a real bully. I mean, he was just an absolute jackass, and it really irked a lot of people who, while we might be conservative, we don't want to see people beat up on other people, whether they're Democrats or liberals or progressives or whatever. You know,
that's really interesting.
I do think also that there is an aspect of rural America, some parts of rural America, I don't want to stereotype because that's a huge part of this country, that have been sort of sneered at by what they perceive as Democratic media. And I do think that they do want to see those people get beat up on. So it's a, you know, taking a poke.
I wonder if choosing Biden as the Democratic Party nominee might not have been a little bit of a strategic choice to get some people in the Republican Party to identify with him and be upset when he would be mistreated by Donald Trump.
He is the most Republican Democrat you could probably find on the Senate in all of Congress. Maybe in recent history. I mean, he is very much a crosser of borders. And I mean, if you look at most of the legislation that he's authored, it had very much bipartisan authoring to the degree that you can see these days.
I was talking more about, you know, he's an old white dude. And so,
well, that's true too.
You know, if there are a lot of old white dudes voting for, you know, the Republican Party, seeing him beat up in the debate would be like, they would feel it more personally than if he had been, or if the Democratic nominee had been a young Latino woman, you know?
Sure. And it's more than that. His perception is, rather than Hillary Clinton, which was seen as sort of a coastal elite, you know, Joe Biden is not seen in that way. He's seen instead as a blue collar worker who got into politics. That's his perception anyway. You know, I don't think any blue collar worker pays as much as he does simply in taxes. He's quite wealthy, but his persona is that he claims that his roots are there. And so it's harder to look at him getting beat up on television and say, yeah, damn the libs, that kind of thing.
About what you said, the white old dude, I want to go back to the old dude, because Biden is quite old, and if he's elected, he will be more than 80 years old after that. So is the question of the age somehow debated in the U.S.?
Well,
even Trump is not young.
I was about to say, either candidate that is of a major party is going to be the oldest, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe that they will both be, if they are elected, the oldest candidate to ever have been elected to the presidency. And if you look at the average age of Congress, that is not new. The average age of Congress has been moving upward very steadily, such that I think last I looked, it's the average age of a congressperson is 68 years old. There are people who are 80, 82 years old. Nancy Pelosi,
less than
like
Japan.
That's crazy. But we have young people, right? We have a lot of, from what I understand, we have a lot more young people than Japan. So the problem becomes that Congress people are not retiring and politicians are not retiring. And they are not letting new ideas and new generations come and come and lead the authority of the country.
So, okay, we'll close the page soon, but I wonder, how do you think if Donald Trump wins the election, I think we know how Republican people are going to react mostly. And I think, you know, the liberal people are going to lose their minds. But if he isn't reelected, which it seems like it might happen, and everyone is super careful about all of this because of what happened last time, but the polling agencies are swearing that this time they are compensating for everything and they've learned their lesson. But anyway, we'll see what happens. It's only a week away now. If he is not reelected, how do you think your Republican acquaintances will react? Is it going to be like a, yeah, oh well, or like, will they be angry with Biden, or what do you think?
I was, if you had asked me this question 2 weeks ago, I would have been dreadfully worried. When the president was pitching his, fake election, he was talking about how the election was rigged against him, which he said in the original election, even though he won. It seemed to me that was going to encourage riots when if he did not win, right? So I fully expect that there will be riots if he does win. That's just the state of America that we're in, unfortunately. It's very scary, but that's the state we're in. But even if he didn't win, when he was pitching that, the dogma of, if I don't win, the election was rigged against me, and the Democrats, you know, succeeded in rigging the election, which they didn't in 2016, blah, blah, blah. I would have fully expected that there was going to be riots because of that messaging. Now, I don't know. He and other members of Congress have come out and said that if the election result, whatever the election results, there will be a transfer of power. Should Joe Biden win?
Oh, has he said
or at
it?
Least indicated that? Yes, I do believe he said that. It was either in the prior debate, or it was in the last debate, or it was around that time. This last debate was very good for Donald Trump. Mm. He was, you know, he's done this. I think he's done this a couple of times, where one debate out of 10, or one, you know, press event out of 10, he will act very presidential. And I think that a majority of conservatives, or at least a large minority of conservatives, sit here like, why the hell couldn't you have been this for the last 4 years, or at least the last year while this crisis was going on? But within that, anyway, he did say something to the effect of, "There, whatever the results, there will be a transfer of power with, you know, should Joe Biden win, et cetera," which was out of character for him.
Okay. Well, I guess we shall see. It's funny. Yeah. I'm looking at all of this, and I started thinking a few weeks ago that things are really dark right now, not just about the election, but it's definitely scary with the US election, and not just for the US, but when you see the fear of rioting and the fear that, you know, Donald Trump was stoking, and I guess maybe still is. I don't know that that's the case, but he feels like he's not. It feels like he could just decide not to accept the result of the election on a whim, and that would be incredibly scary.
He will contest for sure.
I mean, we don't know. It's impossible to predict what he would
do. If it's a landslide, I would doubt that he would be able.
Well,
to contest
the issue
if
is with mail-in. With mail-in ballots, the results might change a couple of days after the initial results, right?
I'm not wholly concerned about that, simply because this election's going to be decided by like 1,000 votes in a couple key states, 1,000 votes per state in a couple key states. Like, it's not like we've got to count up the popular vote, you know? Like, if Florida, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Minnesota, if these states go a certain way, then you can kind of know that what's going to happen, even if there's a, you know, some mail-in ballots coming in otherwise.
Well,
there's a chance. Sorry.
Go ahead, Martin. Yeah, of course.
No, I wanted to talk about the fact that he will for sure contest, and even if it's a landslide, he will contest anyway. And I was talking about that with a journalist friend of mine. Hi, Julian. And he said something interesting, that he could, as a trick, of course, contest and bring this to the Supreme Court to delay the official results and delay it over and over to a point that the result could be somehow invalidated.
I don't, let me take that one, Alex. I think he won't. I think he won't. I think he's going to accept the result of the election if he loses. But I think he will accept it officially and then complain that everything was done to rig things against him. Maybe not exactly say in the ballots or, you know, he's going to keep saying I should have won it.
The media was rigged against him and stuff like
that. Stuff like that. Which, and to his base. Some truth for that. Okay. To his base, I think he's going to be playing that card. For his life after the presidency, because he's going to keep milking this forever. He's going to stay a figure in the political landscape for a long time. And I think that's going to be his pitch of why he lost, because obviously he can't have lost because he was actually voted out. You know, it's like, oh, but, you know, I should have won if this and that. But officially, I don't think he's going to do things like, you know, if he loses, unless there's reason to contest it, I don't think he's going to contest it officially. But
and also, it's worth saying that I've heard the Supreme Court theory, and I have complete faith in the system that even though he's appointed justices in the Supreme Court, they will not rule him into the presidency if he was not duly elected, even though he appointed. Does that make sense?
Like, yes, no, I agree.
That's not how
the
system works at all.
I think yes, the people, like, the weight of the office doesn't affect Donald Trump for some reason, but it's an exception. It's not like everyone all of a sudden is a clown and doesn't do what they're supposed to do. I think the Supreme Court justices will, for something like that, will do the right thing if, you know, the right thing is to, and yeah.
I also think that I guess it might not be a Republican Senate for much longer after the election, perhaps, but I think that the current senators would also riot, for lack of a better word, if he tried to do something like that without due cause, right? If it's a Bush-Gore problem, then that's a different situation.
Yeah. I mean, let's be clear. If that happens, it's essentially the end of the American democracy, right?
Exactly.
That's
exactly right.
And I don't think that is something that anyone, Supreme Court, Senate,
we're there yet.
Yeah. People are not... Those people are maybe attracted by gain, but they're not insane. They don't, I mean, who knows? But no, yeah, I don't
think we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We're not.
Why there not?
Yet.
It could be a good reboot.
I don't nice disagree. disagree.
You're talking to a libertarian here. We should watch what conclusions we come to.
pulls out AK-47. I don't disagree at all.
Listen, we are on our fifth republic in France. It's not a bad idea to sometimes hit the reset button. And the sixth
Jefferson
republic
was very emphatic about that. He said, you know, if the government ain't working, get a new one.
Well, okay. we don't necessarily need to have, to remove the previous one through power of arms, right? That's not necessarily the way you do. But
or guillotine them in some cases, right?
Yeah, that was, you know, the First Republic came after all of that stuff. Uh-huh. But okay, so the thing I wanted to say, and then we'll move on, is that I really think that 2021 could be a very positive year. I think we are starting to see things get better in many different areas. I think most people would agree that a second term for Donald Trump is not the best thing that could happen. I'm sure some people would want him to be voted in again, but I think a lot of people, even Republicans, would say, you know what, it's okay, let's try something else. And I think that might happen. Again, let's not, what's the saying? Skin our sheep, cats, sell the bear's skin. That's different languages, sayings, but let's not
Scott Johnson.
Count our chicken before they're coming to roost or something like that.
Yes,
but
exactly.
There you go.
At least 2021 cannot be worse than 2020.
You know,
don't you dare say that.
That's what we said about that's what we said about 2020 and 2019. Yeah. But
exactly.
I think that I think maybe Trump is not going to be president of the U.S. next year. I think it's not just about that. It's really not just about that. And the fear of rioting and contesting and all of that, I hope it's not going to happen. I think it's not going to happen. And then we have the vaccines for COVID that are going to be arriving, and by the middle of next year, we're going to have enough people that are very much at risk or health workers that are going to be vaccinated, that so things are going to slowly return to actual normality. You know, we have new consoles that are coming, like movie theaters will open again. It's like
very
it's,
important.
It is important. Consoles are important. Like movies, going to the movies, and that, like going to the movies, going to restaurants, going out. By the middle of next year, hopefully it can start again, and that will get the economy going, I hope. You know, all of those things. I think now we're in the darkest times, and it's darkest, you know, before dawn. And I, again, really, I don't just mean that about the U.S. election. And it's funny, I made an editorial about this topic for the patrons of the show. And usually I get a few comments on Patreon or on Twitter or something. On this one, no one replied. Like, not a single person. It was kind of like, okay, well, I guess people are not ready to hear that things might get better. But I really think they might. Okay, anyway, hopefully. Let's turn our gaze to Japan. Quickly, Martin, what's your take on the U.S. election as, you know, it's being discussed in Japan, if it is being discussed, and if not, or afterwards, how is COVID going over there?
So, yes, about the U.S. elections, I have actually 27 points to develop. No, no, just two or three. But we already talked about the contestation. No, I wanted to tell something again about the Republicans that are quite difficult to they change their mind quite.
Often
it's not really easy for them, especially for the real supporters of Donald Trump. So I was thinking about that soft opinion that could go back, that could go to Trump and to Biden. And I was remembering of one special guy. He was a quite hardcore Trump supporter, but he did change his mind, and he was very actively on Twitter trying to convince his former supporters that Trump is a disaster. So,
yeah, I think there's. Go ahead, Alex.
I would just like to say, because I'll probably get hate mail if I don't, that in general, historically, Republicans actually have more of a track record of compromising than do Democrats in legislative perspective anyway.
Okay.
And also from what I found in talking to people, if I, like, at least right now, if I talk to a Republican and I disagree with them, because I do on many points, because I'm not exactly a Republican, they agree. They say, yeah, I get it. I get where you're going, but I don't feel that way. If I talk to a like a hardcore Democrat, it's like, you're immoral. Like, I can't even say my views because I would be like disowned.
Is it fair to say, though, that you're closer to the views of a Republican to begin with? So it could explain why they're like, yeah, okay, I see what you mean. Or
I also have there are things that I can talk about that are very much on the Democratic side is going to say, oh, you're one of us now, right? It's really funny. I could get into like an hour long discussion about this, but it basically, like, on the topic of civil rights, on the topics of abortion, I do lean more blue in those respects, because again, I don't think the government has any business in anyone's social life or how they relate to one another. So I can talk about those topics, but the minute I betray some ideal that has been framed by the media as a Republican ideal, I might I run the risk of getting into a huge screaming match. Like it's okay. It's very authoritarian in that way.
Mm. Okay. I won't jump into that discussion, but let's go back to Japan and how the U.S. election is seen in Japan.
Yeah. And yeah, so my second point, and you will see just for 2 minutes, but you will see there's a link with the Japanese point of view, is, of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC.
Yes.
It's crazy. I'm quite a fan of her. So I was so surprised. So that how she blew up in the media, and like she's so powerful, she's so cool, she's so badass, and really, I wish she could be the next president.
I'm sure you get a lot of. You'll get a lot of. Democrat leaning people, Democratic Party leaning people to agree wholeheartedly, and a lot of Republicans to basically throw up at the
Green
idea
and carry on. Yeah.
Of course, that's what's so sweet about that.
That's what we need, more division, yeah. Please.
No. You know, I really like her. I do think that she, I mean, I think she has an incredible mastery of social networking tools and of social networks.
What she did on Twitch was crazy.
Of course. But I can see how she's, the problem is, so, okay, here's the problem. I do think that Trump and people like Trump are making it very difficult to bridge gaps. And they're being so bullish and so aggressive that it's kind of difficult to say, oh, you shouldn't be like him. You should try to heal rather than divide. And I believe in that. But it's the reality is AOC is using not the same message, but some of the same tools as Donald Trump is. In that she's very aggressive, she doesn't compromise, and maybe that's what's needed, you know, I don't know, and I happen to agree with many of her ideas, but I can see how if you're not on her side, you would be alienated by not what she's saying, but the way she's saying it, in the same way that you are with Trump, with the, you know, so then the question becomes, is it like okay to do it when you're advocating for quote-unquote good things again versus bad things, or should you be it's really the big conundrum here. It's impossible to talk softly when you have someone screaming at you constantly. What I meant is Trump is screaming all the time, so it's impossible to be reasonable in front of Trump, so of course she has to do that, but it's still frustrating that she's using the same weapons kind of. So
Maybe she felt she had she had no choice but fight fire with fire. Yeah.
No, and I agree. She wouldn't would be no one if she hadn't had that
but
strength.
But don't you see that could have been said from the Trump perspective as well?
Well, I think
Trump felt like he couldn't win unless he screamed and yelled and talked about how Hillary was rigging the election.
Because he has no substance.
Rigged the Democratic
Okay, we're getting into a conversation that I don't want to have here now. But
I guess let me just smooth that over and say I love what you just did there, Patrick, because you interpreted the other side charitably, and if we all do that. If we interpret the other side, the other partisan side, charitably, we get a lot clearer picture.
Fair enough. We'll
stop
there.
It's all about yelling.
It's all about yelling. It is. It really is. It really is. The dichotomy, the unbalance of if you're yelling, then no one else can talk softly. And that's unfair. The unfairness, I guess, of the situation where you can't do things the right way in this situation if the other side is not doing it the right way. And we could get into a whole conversation there. But okay, back to Japan. Sorry, Martin.
So back to Japan, yes. And you will see that the link that I mentioned is that, AOC is such a special personality that it's crazy that Japan didn't notice yet because what I see from my French point of view, living in Japan for 18 years, is that really Japanese don't even give a damn for their own politics. So they really don't care for politics abroad. So they, of course, everybody knows Trump. They are aware that he's president, but that's it. And they always take the news from somehow, I mean, especially the television, from a gossip point of view. So they will mostly talk about Trump's wife. And of course they did. And did they talk about Macron's older wife? That's
so very... just to be clear, Japanese people, the population in general, is not politically involved. They don't care and they don't vote a lot. Yeah, that was my feeling when I was there as well. Yeah,
they don't care and they don't. And also, they don't want to talk about. That makes me crazy. I always want to talk about what's wrong in Japan and or even in France, but especially in Japan. So people try to avoid. giving away what they thought, on what side they are. But if they are on one side, because mostly they vote by default. They vote for the stronger party, which is the Democratic Party, Liberal, LPD, Liberal Democratic Party, and that's it. So that's quite frustrating.
Is the COVID situation changing that a little bit, or is it, I don't even know if it's going smoothly or not nowadays, or if it's getting bad again.
It seems smoother than before, but there's a lot of thing to talk about this. But actually, yes, the numbers are quite low, but I think it's mostly because there's almost no tests. So this is quite logical. No test equal numbers very low.
Why didn't we do that? What the heck?
Yeah, good idea, no?
I didn't know that was an option.
yeah, they are quite good at it because they do it from the very beginning of the pandemic. So first, when it started, can I be a little bit chronological?
Go ahead, but let's not do the whole year.
No. Sure, but no, they... until they pretend nothing was happening until the cancellation of the Olympics, you know. But it was already hitting pretty hard, and there was many cases, but Japan was pretending no, it's okay, because they wanted the Olympics to happen so badly. They were afraid to be cancelled, so they ignored. And when it was finally cancelled and postponed to next year, which is very unlikely to happen, to my opinion, suddenly they woke up and they said, "Oh, by the way, there's a bad virus, so you should be careful." And then started by quite magically, many ways to protect yourself. So, like a soft lockdown, and many measures. But of course, put the mask on. But as you know, Japanese people are quite used to it. So yes, and to go back to now, it's weird because they. It seems that nothing changed. They always say that really no, just 300 cases a day. But how many tests? And the more they test, the higher the numbers go.
I mean,
so maybe they
obviously.
Funny how that works.
Obviously, the number of tests varies. I mean, the number of cases varies when you count tests, and you can also count deaths in a different way. But just to give you an example of how things are in France, we have about like 40 to 50,000 new cases a day on the days we report it in the past few days. Yeah. Like the record was 52,000 on October 25th. And, you know, there are peaks and valleys, so maybe they're reported every few days, so it accumulates. But we're at 50,000 on the peak day, which is obviously insane. There was a day at 40,000, one at 42,000. Now it went back down to 26,000. But the number of deaths have spiked today to 500. It was fairly low before. It got up to a couple of hundred and now 500 yesterday. In Japan, Finland, we have almost nothing. People are worried because there are a few dozen cases here and there. And it, when you count deaths, there's like 1, 0, 4, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, stuff like that. Cases are, you know, they spike at a few hundred, maybe 1, 2, 300 on average. But in Japan, which was what I was getting at, the cases are very low indeed. You have a few hundred cases every day, but the deaths are almost
like
nothing.
300.
No, deaths are 5, 7, 10. So I don't know if they're counted differently, but even if you count differently, it means there are very few deaths, I'm guessing.
But I heard a few rumors, but they are only rumors that they are actively hiding, especially the death count.
Well, you don't even have to hide it. You just have to not test them.
Well, you know? I guess for the deaths... Yes
Can't
and
breathe.
No.
I think
a doctor has to determine cause of death when the person dies of, you know, no matter what happens. So I'm sure they could hide some of them, but let's say they manage to hide half of them and the other half is counted. Let's say there's double the number that's reported. That's still very few number of deaths.
Still it's quite low, yeah.
Yeah. Even if it's 10 times more. Even if it's 10 times more, it's still way under 100 most days. So I'm feeling like...
Yes, and given the Japanese population, we can say it's quite low.
Mm. That's how it feels like, at least. Mm. So, you know, Japanese people, are they staying home? Or because homes in Japan are very small. I imagine it's much more difficult to stay home in Japan, especially if you live in one of the big cities, than it would be in many other countries. Are people staying home?
Most of people, but as I said, it was just a soft lockdown. So people... Mm. Tried to do some teleworking, and at the beginning the companies were pretty not okay to say go back home and do some
and work
teleworking.
From home, yeah.
But yeah, work from home. So I even saw a commercial on television about a software to spy on employees.
Of course.
to check their computers. But yes, people tend to stay home. Mm. Except, you know, very traditional Japanese companies, because as we said in a previous episode about Japan, Japan seems pretty modern in a technological point of view, but it's quite old in the way things change the administration changed.
It's gigantic company. It's essentially IBM from the 60s everywhere in Japan. That's how it feels
Exactly.
Yeah. So I can see how they would have a problem remote working, but... okay, so people don't care about politics. COVID isn't too bad. Maybe the bright future of tomorrow I was talking about for 2021 is Japan. It's just that we'll all be like Japan, although politics can be complicated, actually, even if people don't care.
I think all of us should just stop testing and then everything goes back to normal. That sounds great.
No, again, the deaths still happen and you count those deaths. But Alex, the solution you're looking for is stop testing and stop counting deaths. Then everything's
there
back to normal.
You go.
It's that simple.
Okay. Yeah.
Golly, guys.
We will die anyway one day. So.
Exactly. Yes.
What's a few years difference? A
couple hundred thousand people die. Who cares?
I feel like in the US, we've discussed it a few times, and it feels like the situation is still basically the same. Last time we talked to Tony, our good conservative friend, he was saying the important thing is to know what you're looking for. Are you looking to reduce the number of cases? Are you looking to reduce the load on the healthcare system? What are you looking for? So he was,
exactly.
Yeah. And it feels like in my book, the Trump administration is not succeeding in any of those metrics. So it doesn't matter which one you're looking for. It seems like things are not being done. I don't think they're being done as poorly as some people are reporting, but I think they're not being done well because of that lack of coordination and leadership. And to be fair, every single country feels like their government is bungling it completely.
Exactly, yeah.
But
and
except
I
for
do
Finland,
wanna,
by
I do
the way.
Wanna... Well, what's the population of Finland?
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Finland, like eight people and a goat, right?
It's not the population, it's the density, right? And also, we have a fantastic prime minister who is doing a really good job at all of this. And
How lucky.
Yeah,
I'm
know.
Very jealous. Yeah, I'm super but, jealous.
But lucky you are.
But to be
I
fair,
I remember when we used to call our politicians fantastic.
To be fair, the situation. I wonder. It's going to be really interesting in a few years when we have actual scientific analysis of all of this that will tell us what the deciding factors were. And I'm sure that things like remote working and wearing masks and all of that plays a role. But I'm wondering how much the configuration of the country is a factor in that,
yeah.
and how much governments can actually do to mitigate the whole thing, you know, without completely shutting everything down to a point that is impossible. Because even countries like Germany currently, which did really well over the spring, is now seeing an increase in number of cases and everything that is leading people to say, hey, government is not doing what it should and things like that. But
which is, I think that's a really good point of like what brings it back to what you said that Tony said, which is that it's not about just stopping the virus forever. It's about knowing what your goal is because you can't stop the virus. It's going to be there.
I mean, I really feel it's important when we say this, which is true. I really feel it's important to also say, but then it's possible to do it well or not well.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And so what's the feeling currently in at least your corner of the U.S.
For how the virus is being dealt with?
Yeah, the COVID situation in general.
I think everyone's just done with it, to be completely honest. There are MAGA people, like hardcore MAGA people, who do believe that the virus has been handled just as well as it could be. The current tagline is that it's a China virus. We should blame China for it. We should give China a $12 trillion bill, that kind of thing. I don't know that the president is actually to blame for the death toll or the confirmed cases or anything like that as much as he's to blame for not setting a standard. Like the president really has such a lot less to do with that stuff than I think we give him credit for. It's more on state and local governments at some point, especially because every state has to lock down or not as they see fit. So his fault was not setting a standard, not being a leader, not standing up and saying, this is the goal. These are the things we should focus on. The CDC says this, but we need to do more research on that, et cetera.
Which is important. And also wearing a mask and all of that crap, you know, it's
sure.
not.
Yeah. And his fighting against things that clearly were important was not a great play either.
Yeah. So, yeah, it just to finish up on this, I guess, in France, we're getting confirmation like in the next couple of hours, but it's not leaked, but it's been made public that we're getting back into lockdown. I live in Finland where things are pretty okay, but in France, we're getting back into lockdown starting tomorrow, I believe, like full lockdown. Wow. Not full lockdown as strongly as it was in the spring. The details will be explained very soon, but schools are still open in a managed way. Businesses are still open, but people are supposed to stay the F home. And so this is something that could have been done before, but it was just, I think it was a couple of weeks ago that new measures were announced, like encouraging remote working and doing a number of different things. And the situation is bad enough. It's funny, you know, so many people, including my mom, they were, until a month ago, they were saying, oh, the government doesn't want to do a lockdown. They won't do it. We'll be fine. It will be okay. And you look at the state of things and you're like, that does not compute. How do you think things can keep going that way and the lockdown not come back? It's not, and they were like, no. They don't want to lock it back down. It will be fine. And you're like, okay. I guess, fine. And obviously, the lockdown was always going to happen. But it's funny, I was asking people on Twitter a few days ago, do you think the increase of the return of the virus, the second wave, is due to the government's inability to handle it or the French people's lack of discipline? And a lot of people...
Behaving badly.
Yeah, because certainly there's some of that, and maybe there's some of the government having done too little. But it's interesting, a few people responded, you know, maybe it's neither of those things, and maybe it's just that the virus is back because it's coming back everywhere, and that's the only thing that can stop it is an actual lockdown to limit social interaction like we did in the spring. And
it's not going to get eradicated. So the minute you open up again, it'll be back. It's still
no,
there.
The game, as I was saying in my hopeful 2021 section of the episode, is
the lockdown until a vaccine.
Exactly, which is hopefully.
But think about how many doses they have to produce. That's a wild number. Wild amount of manufacturing.
Which is why I was saying things are going to get better around next summer. It is obviously, it's not like, you know, January 17th, we have the vaccine approved and ready and everyone's vaccinated. I'm setting aside the issue of the anti-vax idiots.
That's quite optimistic.
I right. think so too. I really think like and there seems to be a growing, consensus among public health workers that the goal would be to lock down vulnerable populations and just let the rest of the people go. Open up school, let children go unless they have parents who are in vulnerable populations, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that would be, I don't know. But I mean, the way I see things going now is lockdown for the winter. That's it. We're going to have to do that. And keep the schools open. Because
it's cold outside. So
who wants to go out, right? And keep schools open as much as possible in some managed way, because I guarantee you, parents are going to go insane if they have to go through the whole summer with their kids at home. It's just like mitigate as much as you can and wait for vaccines. Hopefully early 2021, we get some approved and you start by vaccinating as many vulnerable people as you can and healthcare workers as you can. Over a few months, you have enough of those that are vaccinated that you can start getting things back to normal a little bit. That seems to me like the more plausible scenario. And we're going to go towards the end of the episode, but I do want to ask both of you, do you think that scenario is plausible or am I like smoking something?
It's a bit optimistic.
Really? Why? What do you think is going to happen?
Usually I'm the optimist, but...
The sheer amount of manufacturing that has to happen in order to produce these vaccines because it's not just France, right? Unless France has everything that they need to produce the vaccine, which they don't, it's got to be produced for the whole world with whatever country it develops it.
No, but everyone's going to...
For share or whatever it may be.
once we have it, once the vaccine is approved, everyone's going to be producing it. Like but
there's limiting factors. Like there's certain pieces that can only come from some mine in Argentina or a lab in France or something like that. There will be certain pieces that are this railway blockage that means that you can only produce the vaccine so fast.
I don't think that's how it works, but maybe we will have to get someone who actually knows who's what they're talking about instead of me to discuss that topic.
do you think they will be greedy enough to keep the recipe?
No, they'll sell it. They'll sell it. I'm not saying we're going to get, 500 million doses in 2 days. It's going to be, I don't know, a few million a week. And it's going to take time. It's going to take months. When I'm saying towards the summer, I'm not saying everyone's going to be vaccinated in summer. I'm saying enough people are going to be vaccinated that you can start relaxing stuff, because the people who are the most at risk and the people who are in the healthcare community are vaccinated. Those are, you're not going to vaccinate 59 million people, or how many French people are, 70 million people at the same time. You're going to vaccinate maybe 5 million, in the first few months.
It's on a global scale.
But Alex, it's not going to be one lab in Wisconsin that's going to be manufacturing things for the whole world. All of the labs are going to be equipped.
It will be certain small labs that are manufacturing certain pieces, is what I'm saying. Like the indicator actually did a really interesting
podcast. It's not a car, though. Yeah.
But it is similar. It is very similar in that there are certain compounds that are not made anywhere else. That's like, this specific company has this specific recipe or whatever. I'm not an expert on it, but from what I have heard from people who are experts on it, it is like a car in certain ways.
Okay. I guess we will have to wait and see what the production rate can be. But I don't know. We produce seasonal flu vaccines for the whole world in a few months every year.
We're set up for that, and we have for decades.
Of course, of course.
And that's a totally different recipe.
All right.
That's a totally then different.
I will call it. By the middle of summer next year, 2021, the elderly and healthcare workers will all be vaccinated in the Western world.
I'm in.
All right.
Let's go. I'll take that bet.
Deal.
Okay.
I do think that we'll all be opened up, but I don't know that it'll be because the vaccine's proliferated.
All right. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Thank you both.
For president.
We have a wonderful saying in France, which was coined by a president. I think it was Jacques Chirac. Let me just check who it is very quickly. I'm Googling like a mad person. no, I don't have the source. Damn it.
Do you remember?
I remember the quote. I want to say the
But who said it?
So that's the problem. I don't remember who it was. I think it's
always difficult to track the real origin of quotes.
Yeah, I think this one. So anyway, the quote is promises only like it involve those who believe them, and I think that commit those who believe them. The only people committed to promises are those who believe them, and I think it's Jacques Chirac. It's either him or François Mitterrand, who had amazing quotes. But anyway, okay, we really need to go. Thank you both for being here and dealing with me, Alex. If people want to get more from you, where can they go?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at A Mitchell Coach. You can also follow my gym, Stronger Now, at Stronger Now Gym. You can go visit my website at www.strongernowgym.com. And other than that, I'm on Facebook, I guess.
Excellent. I'll link to your Instagram account in the show notes. Awesome. Martin, what about you?
Yes. Yes, I, as you might not know, I am an illustrator, so I am drawing mostly every day. So I'm posting, I'm going to post more. I was a bit away from the social networks, but I am going to post more drawings on my Twitter and Instagram, so which is Baron Maletin. So I will let Patrick spell it in the episode notes. And I also I have also a dusty website that I'm going to update soon again. So please check my drawings.
Baron Maletin on Twitter and Instagram. The link to Twitter will be in the show notes. For me, it's not Patrick. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of that. If you are interested, you can follow me there. And most importantly, Patreon at patreon.com/thephileasclub. The link is also in the show notes. And if you want to support what we do, please go ahead and visit that website. I think you might enjoy becoming a patron because it means you are awesome. And who doesn't want to be awesome, honestly? All right. Thank you very much to all of you for listening. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Martin. And we'll talk to you, once we're out of all of this. I mean, part of it. All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.